I'm Darius Larson from St. Cloud, Minnesota, campus pastor there. And I'm on the teaching staff here as the village philosopher. Several people always ask, what does that mean? And I wish I knew too. It's basically a person who is kind of the gadfly, the person who fills in different places and also leads the evening forums. This week we've had such a full teaching staff also. It's been really great having other resource people up here to try to be catalysts for these evening discussions. Today at the Bible study that Dan was teaching, there was a discussion that seemed to want to continue on what I would basically sum up as simple living, or how do we learn to share the bread. And I thought it would be appropriate tonight to have a forum on simple living, which I call simple living, why is it then so difficult? I would like to just set the stage by sharing a few quotes and sharing a confession with you. The first one is from Alice Adventures in Wonderland. "I wish you wouldn't squeeze so," said the dormouse, who was sitting next to her. "I can hardly breathe." "I can't help it," said Alice very meekly. "I'm growing." "You have no right to grow here," said the dormouse. "Don't talk nonsense," said Alice more boldly. "You know you're growing too." "Yes, but I grow at a reasonable pace," said the dormouse, "not in that ridiculous fashion." Another one from I don't know where, but it's just a good one. "Let us live within our means, even if we have to borrow the money to do it." And one from John Bright.
That last one's by the federal government.
John Bright says, "He is a self-made man and worships his creator." "It's easy to look down on others. To look down on ourselves is the difficulty." A confession. I suffer from a disease. A disease that is fatal for many people. Thousands have died from it. I'm a consumer-holic. I like to buy things. I make all sorts of excuses of why I really need them. My poor son, looking through a Christmas toy catalog, first couple pages he points and he says, "I want that for Christmas." Soon he gets so carried away, he just starts flipping the pages and he says, "I want that, I want that, I want that." Hopefully I'm not a role model for him. There's a book John Taylor wrote called Enough is Enough. And I've talked here before at Holden on More is Enough, the American Dream, and how all too often more is enough, or how Miss Piggy at the Bible study, what was that quote? It was very similar to that. More is not enough. That's right. That was Miss Piggy. I think I'm a bit like you. I'm also a contradiction. I think I'm overextended. I think I want to spend more time in my garden. I think I want to have a more simplified lifestyle, so it will be a more qualitative lifestyle. I remember Dan and Karin and Cindy and I years ago trying to get serious about simplifying our lifestyle. And after about an hour or 2 hours discussion, we thought maybe we could reduce four cars down to three cars and share one in common. You know, do you remember that conversation? You know, we do these things, and enough is enough, and more is enough. And I feel like I'm like Thomas Merton, sometimes traveling to my destiny in a belly of a paradox. And I'm sure that some of you feel that same way. The bishop's pastoral on the economy points very strongly, I think, at one thing, and that is that we as U.S. citizens, who, and in their case, Roman Catholics, but I would say U.S. citizens, are not Eucharistic people. We're not Eucharistic people because we don't have an attitude of thanksgiving in our lives. We have an attitude of fear in our lives. Where there is no thanksgiving, they say, there can be no true concern for the poor. And sometimes we think that we don't have enough. And when we think we don't have enough, I think we don't live out of a thankful heart. And briefly, I have six models that I'm trying to ingrain in my psyche. I think four of them come from John Taylor's book. It's published, by the way, by Augsburg Publishing Company, More is Enough. Model number one is don't take yourself seriously. It seems like people who are world changers sometimes forget to be world celebrators, and world celebrators sometimes forget to be world changers. We have to be, as I like to call it, theo-eccentric, God crazy. The second motto is do take God seriously. The third one is, we have to really think about this, the price tag is too high. The price tag is too high. John Taylor gives the example of broiler chickens. If the low price depends on hanging them alive by their feet on a conveyor belt to bleed to death, the price tag is too high. If the eggs are crowded layers, adding orange dye to disguise their deficiency, the price tag is too high. If fast food meat and coffee displaces third world farmers, the price tag may be too high. We have to become willing, Taylor says, to pay more for less because we belong to the same family as the Guyana cocoa growers. And the fourth motto is, who are you kidding? Refuse to be conned. Quote it with pride in unison, he says. Every television ad that you see, who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? Blacklist, he says, any brand you see advertised more than once a week. And switch not to a different brand, but a different product altogether. The aim of ads, he says, I find this interesting, is not to persuade one to buy, but to convince you to pay a higher price. And the fifth motto is you can't take it with you. Happiness is knowing what you can do without. The original blessing was talked about this week, and Matthew Fox talks about practicing the art of savoring. If you can savor more, you will consume less. Have you ever had a piece of cheesecake? I've only once have gotten through a cheesecake savoring it. Most often, after it's gone, I realize how small the piece was. But how delicious a cheesecake can be. when you take just a little bit at a time and let it melt in your mouth, and how so much of life should or could be like that. And the last one is I'm odd, thank God. But this is what Taylor was talking about, and what I think I want to be about is really countercultural. Flannery O'Connor says that you should know the truth, and the truth shall make you odd. It should make you different. We should be intentional about the type of style, about the type of life that we are about as Christians and as consumers. And all too often we get seduced into being something that we're not. So, that's just a little rambling from some of the thoughts and frustrations that I've been having, knowing that I can't imagine what type of lifestyle I would be living if I hadn't read that book and haven't been to Holden and haven't had some dear people challenge me and question me, and if I haven't actually talked about this and said that simple living is the way that we should go. But it's not an easy thing. Simplicity in this case is very difficult. Any comments, feelings?
First question is, what is simple living?
Okay, what do you think simple living is? That's a...
Like a number of years ago when I started working toward the end of more simple living, my lifestyle, that sort of thing, I was thinking in terms of getting away from being involved in mega businesses and all that kind of thing, doing more of my own homemade bread, your own garden, all that kind of stuff. And that kind of living, I mean, if you're simplifying in terms of cutting some places, some of the numerous people and some of the involvement in the capitalist stuff that, not the capitalism, not the other, but this kind of stuff that's wrong, is that I'm wrong. Exploitation of a third world person because I don't buy this or don't do that. But it becomes very complicated way to live in other respects, and a very time-consuming way to live.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's going to simplify my own particular personal life in terms of the time I spend doing things. It's much easier to buy something already made and, you know, paper plates on the table, you know, that kind of stuff, which, I mean, they're gone all the way that way, but their time limit, that seems real tempting to make life simple in that respect. And I think because what I envision is simplified living, what you need to do to get away from getting involved in the things that I think most of the time I think about, is such a time-consuming thing and difficult, but it's easy to step away from that, at least go back part way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the back.
There is a lot of challenges because, you know, I've been in your home. Know what you have, and it's not a negative thing, but I'm struggling then with the concept of what it is to be simple, or not to be simple, but to live simply.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at your stereo equipment and I covet it because it's top of the line. I look at your books. I look at your books and I think, I covet those because you have many, many that I would like.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know about your home in St. Cloud and your home in Albuquerque.
We gave them all away. did you come in late? I said I started with a confession and said I'm a consumeraholic.
Oh, I heard that.
And I talk on these things, but I still think that it's a very difficult thing, and I still long for it, but I'm not able. Whatever it is, I still need to simplify, and I think you're right. I'm nowhere where I think I should be, and I wonder why I'm not there when I think I should be there. And I'm not there, I blame it on society and seduction and all the, I don't even consciously know in my own head when I buy things. I consciously know when I'm saying no to things. You know, I say no to 5,000 things. So I pride myself that I'm only buying one, but then I buy one every, you know, day or something. Your mind works strange ways like that. So yeah, challenge the issue, but I'm right there in the thick of it, struggling. Yeah, and help me struggle with it.
One of those mottos you said was you can't take it with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And as we invest what we have in the Lord's work, use an illustration. If you invest $25,000 in the stock market, boy, every day you'd be checking how that was doing and you'd really be interested in that. Well, if you invested $25,000 in the Lord's work, well, you'd really be praying for that missionary you were supporting. You'd really be active in your church. And so those things count for eternity. And so just because you can't take it with you doesn't mean you can't do something with it for good.
Mm-hmm. There's another model for me. You can send it ahead. Mm-hmm. Yes, here and then right behind you.
It reminds me of... It reminds me of Thoreau's book, Walden, when he went to that little lake, that pond, for 2 years. But all I can remember of the book is the expression when he said, simplify, simplify, simplify. But I remember also that he spent $42.17 building the little house that he lived in. Of course, he lived there for only 2 years. That seems to be the theme of his life.
Mm-hmm. I think another thing we can do is teach our children maybe not to be as consumptive as we are. When you first started, you're telling about looking through the catalog here at Heart Cross has a great little saying that our reading on, it's called We Have, and it's about two kids where the catalog comes and the one's looking at it and saying, I like this, I like this, I like this, and then the younger sibling gets the catalog and she looks through it and she says, we have this and we have this, and she's very cognizant of, you know, being thankful for what she has. And so I guess I would say trying to teach our children not to be consumptive in this kind of world is a real challenge, but I think that, you know, it can be done, it should be done.
Do you have any hints? Or anybody else on how that can be done?
We have some place where there isn't television.
Yeah.
Take away your paycheck.
Take away what?
Take away your paycheck.
Oh, and then you learn fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess from what you said, I guess being a young person, having a lot of respect for seeing people who do that quite simply. And I guess I always still think about it. It seems like, you know, the system really teaches us that we need to have all this. And in some way, you think, oh, you have it. And then the people I see who want to have simpler lives keep on want to simplify what they already have. And I guess just what you said at first kind of suddenly gave me the thought that, you know, too, it's maybe not, you think you still have to be simpler all the time, and then that's just as much of a worry as trying to get someplace higher. That if you take where you are and just try to be happy at that point, or as me as being a young person and not having a lot of responsibilities, instead of trying to get them first and then learning to lose them, trying to understand that right now and trying to make use of that as long as I can, and really picking my responsibilities that I want to have, and not having to, I guess it just gave me the idea of trying, instead of spending so much time trying to get money to have something, spending time learning about simple living or something, it's the same amount of time, and then you don't have to, but not necessarily worrying about being simpler than you already are, mm-hmm. as much. Because then, if you're really conscious about that, that's just as much of a bite maybe for you. You know, maybe it isn't as funny.
There's back in the Albuquerque Journal, 1983, called The Paradox of Affluence. And the subtitle was, Higher Living Standards Have so complicated lifestyles as to require Americans to spend more time in shopping, maintenance, and housework, leaving less time to enjoy life. You know, and it's, yeah. And it shows a lot of reasons why. Yes?
I had a sister-in-law who had many beautiful things. She traveled extensively, and she'd accumulated many beautiful things. And then as she got older, she began to give them away because she didn't want to keep them until she died and had to fight over it. So she began to give them away. And she said it was the greatest relief in life to get unloaded, she said. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You accumulate, and then you try to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I just spent about 4 years learning the industry of sales, and it's generally accepted that humans, by nature, find it very difficult to make a decision that hurts ourselves. I mean, that's just by nature. We don't do that. We fight it. But interestingly enough, in the secular motivation to be a good salesman, the first thing they tell you, if you want to be successful, you have to make a conscious decision to pay the price. In other words, if you're going to be successful, you're going to pay a price for it, so you have to decide what that price is. Now that I'm not sure that's what I want to be, and I want a simpler life, I too have to make a conscious decision what price I want to pay for that. And that's something that we have to do. If you want a simpler life, you're going to have to pay the price. And you have to decide then just how much the price you're going to pay.
What's the price that you had to pay to be a successful salesperson?
I think it's generally accepted that you're going to work 15 hours a day. You're not going to spend time with your family. You're going to have to be indebted. You're going to have to borrow. You know, you're going to have to, you know, take the risks. All of the things that we get caught up in, and it's probably true in corporate life or whatever.
Give a comment here, and then back over here.
You are trying to achieve a simpler life? Is that what you were, say, hoping for?
Sometimes.
And is ease your life mostly an economic thing? I mean, like, we're not going to make quite so much, or are we just not going to spend so much? Or what? You know, I'm a little confused here. I don't think I quite am ready to go to the simple life yet. But what I just, if I could ask you, what are you going to do? Are you going to earn less? Is that, you're going to do less, therefore your parish should pay you less, shouldn't they? Or do you expect to pay the same amount?
Yeah. Well, there's all sorts of rationalizations, you know.
Well, I just figure you should have some answer to that. You're looking for this. What would your counsel, what would your parish, or, you know, you work for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just say, yeah, I want a simpler life, don't pay me so much, or I still want my nice stereo, pay me the same, but I'm not going to work the hours.
In campus ministry, and there's 11 campus pastors, and we try to get across to our state agency that they should pay everybody with more than 6 years of experience the same amount. So we don't get this competitive edge and seniority and all these sorts of things. We're working on that. We no longer give percent increases. We give whatever money is available, we divide that equally by the 11 people, and they bought that. But sometimes when you bring it to the parish council, even if you want to do that, they don't understand what it is you want anyway. So that's one side. It's managerial styles, probably, you know. Another point is, all I know is that my life at times seems very hectic, and I wish that it could be less hectic. And then I say, what does that mean? And then I say, maybe I shouldn't work as long of hours. I should be at home more. And then I moved into a ministry where it's flexible, that I could be home in the afternoon, evening, and go out in the evening, and those sorts of
things. Isn't that kind of late? I mean, you went into this profession not knowing that you work 24 hours a day, or whatever that you do? Well, I mean, just like this gentleman here. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knew or if he didn't know, he should have known that when he went into sales, you're going to work 15 hours a day if you're ever going to get in.
But, okay.
But you're going to be the highest paid profession in the country.
Not in the ministry, though.
No.
That may be, okay. If any of you would like to discuss this, this would be a very good form sometime. Are pastors expected to work 10, 15, 20 hours a day or not? Or are the parishioners supposed to guard the pastor's time so that the pastor can be more holistic?
Didn't mean to get you on that.
I think that's a powerful, powerful topic for probably next week. Over here and then over here.
Yeah. Okay, I think to solve this dilemma that you're talking about, it's not an intellectual decision. It comes from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that can be done without any pressure. It's something that just sort of comes to you to do this. There's no fighting it. It just something snaps inside you and you just sort of flow that way rather than trying to fight things. The process from the heart rather than the intellect, and it comes naturally.
And it does for you?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. How does that do that for you, me and for other people?
Well, for me, I chose a job which didn't pay as much as I could get, didn't have as high expectations as I could expect for myself. But yet again, it was something which I could do easily and just sort of take it as it came. And then I could have the rest of all my energy and other things doing something that makes me happy inside, makes me less tense, more easy. And I just continued my life that way. And you broaden that into as many categories as you can. You know, you go to the library to get a book rather than just buy the latest hardback. You know, things like that. Or else you don't even need books at all.
Okay, here, one, two, and then three. Remember your numbers.
I think it has to do with the motivation.
My question had to do with that, too. What is the motivation for wanting a simpler lifestyle? Are you dissatisfied with your occupation, for example? Maybe the stress of it is getting you down. I mean, what the simpler lifestyle is an escape from something you don't like. Not everyone, I think, wants a simpler lifestyle. What's to be accomplished by a simpler lifestyle?
Do you have an answer for that?
Is to not use as much of the world's resources.
But what will be accomplished by that?
They won't be used up. They can be more broadly shared.
Okay, but how will the sharing be done? If I reduce my consumption, does that mean some third world people are going to get the portion I don't use?
I don't know that I have a specific answer for that, except that I know that I don't have to, that I'm not, wouldn't be using, way disproportionate amount of my share. And I don't even think that I have to have the answer to that in order to do it. I don't need that rational kind of getting this from here over to those people.
Dan, and then you, and then one, two, three, four, five, six. Remember your number. One. Wait. What? You want to wait? Okay. Two. Three. Okay.
She said, okay.
Well, I was going to besides that, which I think was one of my initial reasons. I think Dan mentioned, I think yesterday's talk, I'm not sure, some comment about that the more we get, the more richer that we become materially, the further we get away from our connectedness with ourselves, with nature, with God, and that the societies that are having more and have materially have been getting places often are finding the spiritual disconnectedness and feeling of incompleteness. And I think certainly an awful lot of Americans feel that from what I hear, what I read places. That's another reason to get simpler anyway, is to retain more connectedness. The more, whether it's a rhythm with the earth or somehow more tuned with God, Yeah, that's one aim, besides the world resources, somehow.
I think that the danger of the consumerism that we get involved in is in the fact that our possessions possess us. And a real simple example of that is a guy I was talking to today said he was really glad he hadn't bought a fishing license while he was here, because then he would have felt he had to fish 2 or 3 days. I mean, on his 3-day license, he wouldn't want to waste that $14. And I think that happens lots of times with our boats and our motor homes or our cabin. Or I mean, those luxurious things are a good example. We feel we have to justify using them. The other example of this simple lifestyle is we can go the route, which we no longer can do in Oregon, but since Rajneesh left. But really, that's what those people were looking for. For the most part, those people were well-educated, fairly wealthy people, a lot of them, and they were looking for a big daddy to make all their decisions for them. They could really live a simple lifestyle. I think that's really what any of us are looking for.
Yeah, yeah. It goes back to the original, what do we mean by simple living?
I think simple living is to be connected with God and doing quality things. I think is what we're talking about, and that does not come in possessions.
On the basis for simple living, that's going to vary with each individual, and
right.
And to be content with what simple living is for you, you need to hear God on that and to spend time with Him, and you can rationalize it and go through your mind, but that's what the world has trained us to do ever since we were born, and what you need to do it in the spirit and listen to God to know where your boundaries are at in that respect. And if you try to rationalize it through your mind, it's probably not going to work out. You're going to be influenced by the world too much. The only way I feel like I can be content to be where I'm living is to continually bring it to Jesus and to ask Him, should I do this or should I do this? And wait, and if I'm not sure, just wait until I know from Him. It's hard to do. Wait, it's hard to do. That's the strength that most of the strong points in the Bible is because the main characters, they were able to wait on God until they heard His word.
And over here, because you passed, then we'll go back to you. Jeff.
This is a fundamental thing, but I have to be reminded of it all the time. That is, I'm a co-sick person along with you.
I'm glad somebody else said that. I thought I was the only one here.
It seems to me that one of the keys in my story, in my process, is simply taking the time to reflect on why I do the things I do and how I live the way I live and how I want to be in connection with other things. And I say that because society, and especially the pastor, I think, by the way, tends to not give me time unless I take the time to think about those things. That to me is always the first step. Doesn't mean I go along with what I find out is man of living, but at least it's the first step.
New York Times essay probably about 10 years ago now said that Americans take time for everything except for to reflect upon that which they're taking time for. Or they schedule in everything but reflection time. They don't have time to reflect. Luther even said, I have a busy day, I got to spend, 3 hours in prayer or something. We say, I got a busy day, I guess I'll pray tomorrow. Prioritizing.
Yeah.
Kind of confused on what I'm trying to say. But I agree with to take decisions about your lifestyle seriously and pray about it. But I have to confess, I guess, my prejudice towards people who say what sounds like the same thing, but I see them driving a Cadillac when a Volkswagen would do, or buying, over-consuming in my eye. I mean, I'm being very judgmental, but I guess that's one thing we do. When they could share that money, or maybe spend more time with their family. But they claim they're consulting with God about it. So, And then some people hold up an extravagant lifestyle as evidence that they're being blessed by God. And that's my prejudice.
Well, they'll stand.
I missed Kathy before, so we'll go there. One, two, three.
There's a mouse running around. There's not that, what you're saying, there's just this mouse that's...
And so we should go ahead and grow the wheat to share instead of cut back on how much wheat we grow. It's almost the same thing.
Yeah, there are definitely, that's, yeah, I never turned down an honorarium for that reason. Or if somebody else says to me to contribute to something and I don't know anything about their organization, but it moves me to think about it, I think at that point maybe I should contribute to something that I do know something about. Did you catch that? Oh. Okay. Excuse, let's try to focus here rather than on the dormouse.
Well, the thing I'm thinking about here is when we talk about simplification, it's always directed towards material things. The stereo has been talked about a number of times. But I'm wondering how many people, if they want to simplify their life, are willing to give up some of the technological advances that have been made in access to them, like medicine, for example. You know, you being from Minnesota and that, you know, the Mayo Clinic, Abbott Northwestern, and all of these. If you or one of your family members needs medical attention, you know, bypass surgery or whatever, how many people are willing to give that up in the name of simplification? So I think, you know, sometimes we draw lines that we, you know, we can get rid of the boat, the motor, but I think we better keep that access to the Mayo Clinic.
Dan?
Yeah,
Dan and then up there. Yeah, yes.
It's not a question of not living in a technological society. We do, we have these gifts. The concern I have is what I think I call idolatry, the promises that are made that somehow more material possessions and more wealth and more money will provide some type of salvation, which is called meaning, it's called happiness. It's the promise that somehow it was going to give blessedness. And this is subtly said on TV commercial after commercial. And to me, simplification is a spiritual act of saying no. And to recognize that God is my only Savior. And that my meaning and my self-worth comes as a gift, totally as a gift, and it's not the points that I earn for the type of clothes I wear. Car I drive, the possessions, the house I live, where I live, all of these worldly, I guess I call them point systems or salvation systems. It's a life of resistance, I think, as much as a life of actually doing this to happen. But I'm not very good at it. Yeah.
Up here and then down here.
I guess just one thing about the resources that you were talking about was that I guess I felt the attitude, two different attitudes about resources is, you know, am I getting my share or am I leaving my share? When I like to look at it more in a cyclical pattern, kind of with the ecosystem and things like that, that isn't there for me to use up. You know, if I don't get my share of tungsten or whatever, then I should still be able to be happy, right? I don't need to get my share. If I can, maybe some people need that, but I don't need to get my share, and it's not so that somebody else can get it, maybe, but just so that a lot of the things that we're taking out are doing a lot of effects for a world that we're not. You know, that we don't even know what to do. And another thing I think that kind of went along with we're talking about possessions was maybe a good idea for me of looking at simplifying life is entertainment, which is not something that you think of maybe as having a lot of or having a little of, but now a lot of people have VCRs and they can every night watch a movie, or they can go out to movies, or they can go out to their numerous amount of different entertainment. And entertainment has almost gotten the definition that it means somebody else is doing something and you're sitting there. Where if you suddenly do that for, you know, a month in a row, then you just, that gets at you too. And you kind of go, why can't I entertain myself? Why can't I feel good about sitting home and reading a book or something more often, or being able to think about things where you, entertainment seems like it's gotten to a point for a lot of people that it's just, it's a reason not to think, or it's a reason to, I don't know, it's another way that we spend a lot of money on when we don't need to, and it can be a lot more beneficial to ourselves sometimes if we make our own kinds of entertainment.
Back here and then back here.
Okay.
Or just right behind you, then back here, and then you. Okay.
I think what you were just saying, Ben, was saying kind of the idea of an idolatry. And I feel is something we don't want. We don't want the things to be that we need, whether it's entertainment or other things. I probably would agree, though, that if people would suddenly say, I shouldn't buy things, or large numbers of people would stop consuming, there would be a little employment problem. I mean, there is, if it stands, but there would be, and it's something that we have to think about. Maybe we need to do some more serious looking at the types of investments that are made with our money. Some types of jobs provide, or some types of money spent provide more employment than other types. The military tend to provide not as much employment as some other types of things. Buckminster Fuller has written some interesting things, maybe some of you are familiar with them. He has an idea that multinational corporations might be a means to achieve some real gains for people in the world. He says that they will probably discover, if we don't blow ourselves up, he says, that you can make much more money selling, instead of weaponry, selling livingry objects. And he said the money that you made will be unbelievable, and it will do good for people, and you'll be able to get much more good out of a smaller amount of energy and natural resources than we would ever thought possible. I have a little trouble really thinking that that could happen, but it's an interesting thought. But it might tie in with how do we invest our money? Where does our money go if we invest our money? Buying things is one way of, in a sense, investing in jobs. Maybe there are better ways.
One thing I think we should examine and face and bring up is the incredible amount of money we spent on athletics. In other words, when you play a baseball player, $1 million, or a university pays a football coach $50,000, you can sometimes wonder what kind of a priority system. As Christians, we are going to ask ourselves, is this all this money spent for athletics and glorification of idolatry really necessary, and should we take a stand against it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good point. Yes, you had 2 points, he said.
I hesitate to tell you this, but it gets worse after retirement. When I was working, I used to rest 20 minutes a day after, and I can't rest anymore. And the second one is a question. Oh, I was thinking, I wonder if things were hectic for Jesus, because he was surrounded by so many people that wanted to be healed, and the Bible says he healed them all. And he was preaching, and then now and then he'd say to his disciples, come apart with me and rest. And then he prayed. And do you think his life got hectic too?
Mm-hmm. Many times he even had to withdraw from the disciples too. He went alone up to pray, and out in the boat to pray, and these sorts of places too. Yeah.
The gentleman that just left said he had a simplified lifestyle. Instead of having a Sunday, he was just going to have a poem.
here and then back here.
Back to possessions. We went to a program last summer where we did some talking about some of this kind of stuff, and there one thought I would brought out about possessions and how to think about them. Besides the underlying fact, you know, understanding that it's all God's anyway and not ours, is that if what we're going to buy, or what we have, or the job that we have, either requires so much maintenance, or so much worry, or so much time, that it takes away from our takes away from our being in touch with God, or our time with the things that are important, like our family, or I think they're talking more about doing the things that the Lord wants us to be doing in other respects. It takes away from our time for giving to others. It's kind of a way to look at, if you're going to buy something, do I have to work so many more hours to buy this? It's going to take away from the time I can give to the food bank, you know, or something like that.
A witness or preacher,
you know, it means I can't go to my daughter's choir, you know, recital or concert or whatever the things happen to be for you. But then maybe that's over possessing, you know, too. It's one way to look at it.
If I can overgeneralize quickly here, there's two basic trains of thought that I've been hearing. One is one's life is too hectic and one needs to simplify one's life in order to get back to something or to get to another place of balance. And the other is the idolatry question, or that, you know, we are using too much resources for our wealth, you know, even though we might be feeling a very nice balanced life, somehow it's wrong because there are other people who have more needs. Both, I think, are valid in dealing with the simplifying lifestyle, but I think those are two trains that I've been picking up here. Back from the next thing. Yeah, did you? And then over here.
Okay, you really touched on what I was going to comment. I think we're asking somewhat different questions when we talk about simplified lifestyle. And I wonder if it would be helpful to try to juxtapose against simple other words like hectic, anxious, burdensome, which then may put us into different contexts where we ask the question somewhat differently. The person who finds that his life is becoming very hectic and he is developing some high blood pressure and not sleeping too well, I need to simplify my lifestyle. Well, that's a different question than the one that Dan serviced when he talked about the spiritual issue. When one is living life and you come to the realization, you know, I think I'm getting off base. I'm becoming more like that man in Jesus' parable who tore down his old barns and built the new ones. And thought this was really the answer to life. The fact that now he was financially secure, and his dad said, that's a hoax. That's tragic. And so there the issue of simplicity in life is in a different context than at first. I think in our case, when our children were growing up, we made some very conscious decisions about lifestyle. Definitely. And it had to do with the values that we were imparting to our children. And they meant values that my wife and I were trying to exemplify. So I guess I'm trying to suggest that when you look at this topic, you know, simplified lifestyle, that it might be helpful to examine the context within which you're understanding, and maybe the question that you're trying to address when you talk about simplified lifestyle with your economic, personal meaning, health, different contexts.
Good.
I heard something that I want to share, and it goes like this. The person says, well, I finally made it to the top of the ladder, but it's leaning against the wrong wall. Meaning that you finally strove very hard to get success, but you get up there and it's meaningless because it's not the real goal that would have satisfied you.
Another analogy like that, too, and I don't like ladders, but it's a good one, that how many of us can describe a person one rung up, and how many of us can describe the person one rung down? We normally know what we don't have. That's just a good test. Then what, you know, it's that, whoever said that, the child who says, what, I want that versus we have that. It's maybe some of that. Over here and then up here.
I don't think there's any one question, one answer that's going to be for everybody. And I think you can get just the sum up. I mean, you're really trying to get some meaning to your life. And what you're really trying for is the sense of abundant life, which Christ has promised us. We'll give you life, we'll give you life abundantly. And you're wanting a sense and a feeling that you have this. And you, if your possessions that you have get in the way, you end up feeling empty. But if you then make the intellectual decision, I'm going to give them all away, and if I live this simple lifestyle, then I'll earn up my points to get this inner feeling. You know, you can give things away and still be left empty inside. I think it's more somehow working out between you and God what's the right thing. And I happen to think that God has given us the talents, and that the human potential that He wants used, and idleness can be as devastating to people as overwork. Probably think they're probably the greatest portion of people that are in the overwork hectic category that are in the idle. But to have talents and resources and things, your own human potential that you're not using, this can be frustrating to you as an individual.
But it's all that, but it's also the question of, this may be too hard, maybe it isn't, exploitation. It still has to somehow look at what my lifestyle is doing to my brother and sister, wherever they may be, as well as what is it's doing to me. And it's a both and struggle, and you constantly have to think of both of those things, I think.
Yeah, but I can't solve the whole. Somehow I have never felt that my not drinking coffee has really gotten back to somebody in a third world country. I mean, somehow I think if I'm really going to affect them, I have to do something more than simply not buy coffee, which I've been doing and the problem hasn't gone away.
Mm-hmm. But it's a start. Mm-hmm. It's a start. We have time for about two more questions. I acknowledge you here, and then who, then over here, and we'll see where we are after that. Yeah.
Another idea I just had about simple living, that the system really seems to force on you, is education. You feel like you need to know so much of everything. I just spent my first year of college, and I'm interested in so many things, and I'm told in one way I'm supposed to focus. I have to pick a major. I have to go in that way. And in a way, I don't want to do that. And I pick classes that are maybe interesting to me. But I have this feeling still that I want to be educated in different things, at least that I choose. but that that's important too. In a way, that's not being simple either, because if I guess I related to the idea of if I take some, I want to learn something that's going to teach me how I relate with things. Because two examples, I guess, is that I took a dance class this semester, and if I look at a dance, I'm going to either like it or I'm not going to like it, depending on if I like anything about dance or not. And then I take a dance class and I learn all the definitions that people have put on it, and at the end, I could look at it and say, oh, that person didn't do very well, or that person's making mistakes. But then after I leave the dance class, I'm going to go back to, even what I know, I'm going to go back to feeling whether I liked it or I didn't like it. It's kind of a synthesis of your education of all the definitions again. And I feel kind of a force that says, you have to learn all the parts for all these things. Or I guess, like if I thought of taking biology or something, I have maybe a bad feeling about it, but I have a feeling like you learned all these, so many definitions that people have made up until you've learned all that everybody's made up, and then you get to make new names for some smaller ones, you know? And then other people can learn them, and they have done a lot of useful things, and I'm not putting that down. But those people have had to synthesize that too, and there's so much to learn. That in that same sense of context or focus, you have to pick the things if it's for the Lord. Which things does the Lord want you to do? Or which things are not helping you in that way at all? And that's why I guess you're on the idea of being able to say, I don't need to have superior knowledge of physics and of all these things, as long as I have the power maybe to know somebody who knows it, or that that's a way to see it.
Yeah, as we call ourselves Christians, this is a little technical, but, which is to be Christ-like. If that's our main goal in life, is to be as much like Jesus as we can, and follow His example and what He did, and His everyday walk and spending time with Him.